This podcast is given to you by Arloka David Smith, teacher and founder of the Dharma Mind Buddhist Group. For more information, please go to dharmamind.net.
So as I mentioned yesterday, I like to keep these talks to a theme, open up to a theme, and see how we get on with that. And Joe, I think, was in line for a theme as opposed to a question. So what would your theme be, Joe?
Pondering.
There you are. You see how simple it is. Pondering, of course, it's very important, as all aspects of this training. Many, many, many different perspectives, many themes, indeed, that we need to get a good sense of, a good feel for, and cultivate that understanding ever deeper, so that we can move from one area to another, because this isn't a sort of what's the expression, a one pony race or something, one horse race,
this
one trick pony, whatever. There's lots of tools that you have to have in your tool bag, in your bag, whilst on the spiritual journey. And so therefore, to become skillful with any particular aspect of it is very, very important. And this is a part of the maturing process. And there's no shortcut to mature any particular. You can't suddenly become an expert with anything. Everything is a cultivation. Every aspect of it, because you're going into areas, you're opening up parts of yourself you're completely unfamiliar with, and you're learning, I'm tempted to say, a trade that you've not touched before, that you've had no experience before, and things that you don't come across in the world, in normal worldly cultivations. Plenty of skills in the world. These are dharmic skills, and as I say, there are lots of them. And whatever particular theme, whatever label, subject, aspect comes up, need to work with them rather than shunt things to the side because they're not. Consider them not to be important. And I think everything that we talk about, I mean, in this group, we deal directly with the practice, with the training. We don't deal with a big, broad, wide subject such as Buddhism. We don't do that. We don't get into philosophy and all of that stuff. I mean, if that door was opened, then that's something that's quite endless. Interesting though it may be, much of it could actually be a hindrance to your getting to know yourself and your liberation. So I think the training has to be honed down on whatever we talk about has to be something that we can all use and learn to identify with and learn to use as being essential aspects of getting to know ourselves. And pondering is a very, very important one. And it's one that's often, I think we do touch on two or three things that, something like restlessness, for example, which to me is so, I mean, it's so vital, it's so important. It astonishes me that something like that, like restlessness, you hardly ever come across it. I don't know, maybe you do, maybe I've missed something. But in terms of training, in terms of getting to know yourself and learning the skills, honing the tools of the trade, to learn to become alive and awake to something like restlessness, I just don't. I mean, it's like it's at first base, because it's something that we all have to, that we all, virtually all of us have to confront right at the beginning. And restlessness means agitation, and if there's agitation, there's no stillness. If there's no stillness, you don't get to know yourself. So if you're not still, I don't want to go off subject here, but I'm just highlighting. I don't know why it's not aired more often with people who train, who consider themselves to be to be practicing the Dharma, to be on that journey, that spiritual journey. How can you? And pondering, I think, I don't know, and maybe that's something else that I've missed. As a subject, pondering. I've not really come across it. It's got to be there somewhere. I don't know what the Pali word is or the Sanskrit word is. And pondering is definitely an aspect. It's definitely a part of the whole process of insight, the whole journey of insight, because insight again is not a one, what is it, one pony, what was it,
one trick.
It's not when we talk about insight, it's not a one trick pony, i.e. here is your method, take it away and develop your method and your system. Insight is much broader than that. It's not, of course, that's the heart of it, if you like. That's possibly the most important feature, is to learn how to burrow into yourself with the whole experience, the whole practice of insight, and you have to learn how to do that, and that's of course very essential. But a part of the feature of insight, what does insight mean? It means getting to see yourself, getting to know yourself, getting to unpick yourself, to break through to who you really are, to go through the obstructions and the barriers And the protective walls that we build around ourselves, so that we spend our lives actually avoiding ourselves, that we're always going out and never going in, and that feeds into restlessness. Restlessness will always take us out there, will never take us in. When we're restless, we're always out there. So this is part of the wall building. Restlessness is wall building. Wall building means that you put a wall around who you are, and you suffer in your life, and you don't know why you suffer. You don't know what's this about? Why is life like this? Why am I like this? Surely it doesn't have to be like this. What can I do about it? How can I go beyond this experience? And the way that you go beyond that experience is that you get to know yourself. You get to see where it's all coming from, who the creator is, how it's created, why it's created. All of these questions that you ask yourself. These are all part of the insightful process, the insightful journey, the insight journey, the tools that are used to unpick or to dismantle, if you like, the barriers we put round ourselves, so that we never have to be with ourselves, basically. Because when we're with ourselves, we don't like what we see, and when we see what we don't, we see things that we don't like. We don't know what to do with that. The only thing we know what to do with stuff that we don't like, some of the stuff that's fearful, and that's what we're talking about, is to run away from it. Because it's horrible and it's too big for us, and so we learn to run, we learn to protect ourselves, we learn to put the shields up and bat these things away, or run away from, bury ourselves, or bury the fears and all of this stuff, and we suffer. We have this suffering, and we don't know what to. I mean, everybody will say that, you know, life isn't. If you ask them, sit them down, everyone will say that life is satisfactory to some degree or another. Some obviously experience it more than others, but everybody will say, well, that's life. That's how it is. Shrug the shoulders and get on with it, or put up with it, or find ways of managing yourself, of manipulating yourself, your way through life. Find ways of avoiding the difficult bits, and so on, without ever getting to know the cause and the source of this unsatisfactoriness that we call suffering. But we, for whatever reason, maybe it's a mysterious reason, we turn around and we look at that, and we want to do something about it. We want to get to the bottom of it. We want to at least understand why things are the way they are. Why can't they be this utopian image that we can all have, this sort of wonderland, or, you know, the sort of realms that children live in, and the imagery that all that creates, and we'd all like to lose ourselves in that experience. Why can't it be like that? And us people, we want to get to the bottom. We want to understand and answer these questions, and hopefully go beyond all of that stuff. And for us, the way that we go about it, we call it the spiritual journey. That's the way, that's the sort of focus, that's the theme, the direction that we go in, as opposed to analysing and try to analyse our way out of suffering, which I don't believe is possible. We have to really get down into the nitty-gritty, right into the core reason why. And we go on this journey, this aspect of training that we call insight. We go on an insight, we have an insight path. Fundamentally, this journey is split into two aspects of it. There's samatha, there's calming, passive, learning to be quiet, learning to be still, however you want to translate or define that word, samatha, and vipassana. Vipassana means insight, it's to burrow into it and to understand. And that means burrowing, that doesn't mean just observing, that means to burrow, to find the tools to be able to chip away at the brick wall, because that's what you come up against. The wall isn't going to fall away just because you look at it. You have to actually actively engage with it. You need the stillness, you need the samatha to take you to that place, that environment. And that in itself will have reward, will have insight, simply because you're still. You will see things with a greater clarity. And anybody who does that type of, has that sort of training, will I think that can be very deceiving for some, because they think, because some insight does come out of a samatha practice, they somehow think that it's also a vipassana practice. For example, the most common one is metta bhavana, which is a very, very common and a very skillful tool to use, but essentially it's one of calming. It is not an insight tool. It is not classified as an insight practice, but because you learn to be still, you learn to be quiet, you learn to settle the waves, the turbulence, it will bear fruit, insightful fruit, but it will be only insightful fruit to a certain degree. But it does deceive a lot of people who think, well, that's all you need, and they can spend your whole life using that practice on the assumption that somehow you're going to get a deep spiritual breakthrough with it. Well, that's that's highly questionable, and it certainly isn't in the category of insight. What will answer your questions? Answer the question not intellectually, but actually you'll see why you suffer. You'll see the cause of suffering, and you'll see the way out of suffering. This is what insight tools, the insight practices, if you use them correctly, these will take you to that place where suffering can cease, where suffering comes to an end, and you become free. You go beyond that experience. And it's an active engagement, but it can have many perspectives. It's not a one-trick pony. It's several tools for your tool bag, for your insight tool bag. And different traditions have got different tools. Some have got a lot, some have got very few. For us, our main focus, what is essential for us, is to develop that calming, that stillness, the silence of the mind, and the stillness of body and activity, because that is a massive, massive challenge for us people, us Western people, have to give that a lot of focus, because our culture has taught us to be busy, to be productive, to be goal-orientated. It's what identifies us. And you take that identity away, and it's a very serious thing for us and a very difficult thing to pull off. But for us, we need to look at that, which is why we need to look at our lifestyle and our ambitions of life and what motivates us. Because we're on the spiritual path, we're not in the world anymore, we're developing that. The qualities and the characteristics of the spiritual path, which is not of this, especially of our culture, is the complete opposite. And we have to learn those things in order to create that environment. And once we got that environment, then we can begin to investigate ourselves. And as far as this training goes, this investigation can take on various forms. It's not pinned down, it is not nailed down, it is not an ABC, but rather you create an open forum for yourself, and once that forum is created, i.e. stillness, silence, spaciousness, then you've got a good chance that you're in a place of selflessness. There is no self. If you're still in a place of agitation, that sense of a self will be around, and you can be pretty sure that any sorts of what you consider to be insight practice is going to be polluted by the self and quite likely be a complete ego trip. This is why we find this place of stillness where, if but for a few moments or minutes, seconds, minutes, we're in a place where there is the distortion of self is not with us, and what is seen is quite likely to be authentic, is to be genuine. It may well then become a possession of the self. This is the danger that follows us at all times, and we have to be careful, but nevertheless that can originally be an authentic insight. And that insight can be pursued. I've encouraged you to one of the classic way that's common to all, pretty much, as far as I'm aware, pretty much all tradition, is to look at the three characteristics of any phenomenon, and that includes you, because you are a phenomenon. You are an object, you are a thing, or as you imagine yourself to be. And all things have three characteristics of not being something permanent, but being impermanent, of being in a state of Dukkha, as it's called, agitation, that you look at anything closely enough, you will see that it is not settled and peaceful, that there is always a sense of this word that we use that has many, many, many perspectives, from something very crude and very obvious into very vague, into great subtlety. But everything has that characteristic of unsatisfactoriness. And, of course, nothing has self-identity. And that's what fools us more than anything, especially when it comes to me, that I do have a self-identity. So all things have those characteristics, and we can use them as a focus to look at anything, but especially ourselves, because this is, we're looking at that, we're not looking out there, we're looking in here. Liberation will never be found out there. So you will only find it by looking in, and take those tools with you. Settle, be still, be quiet, look. And you can embark upon the journey of insight, which is the most wonderful aspect of this training, as things begin to unpick, as you begin to doubt your reality, which can be extremely unnerving. It's part of the journey of unravelling yourself, of unpicking yourself, of seeing what you thought was things were like this, but actually things aren't like this at all. It's more like that. It's not like this. And your whole world, everything that you've assumed to be like this, you begin to question. And it is very wonderful, and you can see the liberation there, because you attach to things. When you can see that actually you shouldn't be attaching to things, but also it can be extremely unnerving. The carpet's being pulled out from underneath you, and that's not the pleasant experience. You feel very often very insecure. We have Buddha Dhamma Sangha to support us whilst we go through this. This is not a nice, simple, passive observation, a lovely little journey of accumulating knowledge. And the path of insight is a living experience, and if you are not living it, then you be careful of it. You see that you're not just embarking upon something nice and safe that's out there. It's got to be in here, and if it's in here, that insightful path is very, very, very personal. It is not an objective exercise, but a very deep personal cultivation, understanding, unpicking. And one of the tools there that we use, the insight ones tend to be, ideally you set up this environment, the stillness, which very often is going to be on, more often is on the cushion. So when you're in this environment this week, you can absolutely bring those tools with you once you're still. But of course that becomes more difficult in your daily life, because simply we're distracted, obviously, and we don't have that sense of stillness that we have on the cushion. But that doesn't take away, that doesn't negate the whole process of insight deliberation. You can bring it, you can watch and be alive and be aware to yourself in your daily life. You can nurture it, you can create the foundations on the cushion, and then you can begin to nourish those roots, which will always be more accessible when you're in, especially on retreat, when you're in this environment, when you're meditating. You will invariably be able to, let's say, go deeper with these things, simply because you have that environment is more stable, is more with you, and you lose it when you get off the cushion. But that doesn't, then you don't then put away your insight tools until the next time you come. And that can often be the case, I believe, when you practice methods and things that you need to. They only work, or you only use them in certain situations, in that particular situation. But for us, we have an open forum. We don't have any rules. It doesn't have to be like this or like that. But the more still it is, obviously, the more skillful, the more, obviously, that's the more ideal. But you're not going to be able to, realistically, especially us, we're in a world of distraction, we've got things to do, we're busy, you're active, engaging with all sorts of things, we can't possibly have carry that environment with us. But what we can do is that you see that, you know, your life, the more simple your life is, the more less you are caught up with things, the more likely you are to be able to be with yourself. And that's where insight is. It's with yourself. It's with you. When you can be able to come into yourself and look and be with yourself without the distractions. And one of the great tools that we can use, other than the more, should we say, the more sharp ones, when we create this environment in a state of meditation, is pondering. Now, pondering, what is pondering? Is pondering thinking? No, it isn't thinking. Actually, thinking, if you're going to think, and we are, be realistic, you're going to be consumed by thoughts during the day. So thoughts come thoughts come in all sorts of degrees, don't they? You get very powerful thoughts, and thoughts that you get very caught up with, that become so real for you, and you get so carried away by them, they possess you. They're very powerful, they're very strong, they're very solid. They're as solid as a brick wall for you at that time, and you completely buy into them, and they are totally real. And that's just thinking. Invariably, those thoughts, when they become really powerful, really strong and very solid for you, invariably they're charged with emotion. When emotion is involved, then those thoughts become ever more solid, ever more real, ever more blinding, to the extent that you can completely forget who you are. You can be completely taken away by them, by some whatever the experience may be. You can completely lose yourself. I lost myself, Your Honour. I didn't know who I was. I just went completely mad. And I did these things, and I didn't know who I was. Well, actually, you don't know who you are. It's true. Completely taken away by thoughts, driven by the emotions, completely blind, completely lost. You're no longer even a human being. You suddenly become something wild, something untamed, something dangerous, something not remotely human, as we like to consider ourselves to be. That's one end of thoughts. But of course, it's all a grading, isn't it? And actually, the grading is always becomes possible. These layers of intensity of thoughts. Of course, it's the subject and how much you're attached to the subject, whether it's something very important for you or whether it's something that's not particularly important, so they fluff around here and there. But thoughts are at their most benign when you have awareness. Because actually, awareness and thoughts, they clash. You can't really have both. You can to some degree, but generally, when you've got good awareness with you, your thoughts are pretty much a very, very benign, if non-existent. But they're certainly not things that take you away. They're things that you can observe and see, and it's X, Y, Z, but you can retain that sense of awareness, so you're not carried. And you're certainly not carried to that extent where the emotions rise up and completely sweep away any sense of awareness. And you just become this thing that you create with the mind, and whatever that action may come out of that. So awareness is the restrainer, is the thing that stops you from being completely consumed by thoughts, and the emotional drive that goes with those thoughts, and the immense attachment that engenders, and the self-identity, which is what it's always about. So you have that awareness. So the more awareness that we can have, it tempers thoughts, and it's always right on the cusp of actually bringing you back to yourself and bringing you back to where you are, here and now. And you can sort of flit in and flit out, but you don't sort of go off too far. And it's like a brake. It's like declutching, driving a car. And you declutch, you put your foot on the clutch in the car begins to lose impetus. And so awareness, as one feature of awareness, begins to slow you down, begins to take you to that environment of stillness. So this is, you know, you don't flick switches with this. It's just, it's grading, grading, grading all the way through. From one extreme to the other. And by learning to... The more that you do this, the more that you see that you want this environment of stillness. You have to refine your life. You have to learn to bring stillness to your daily life. You've got stillness here, in abundance, in bucket loads here. But you want to bring stillness to your life out there, because when the agitation, the restlessness dies down, then you can be with yourself more, and you can bring the insight tools to that, to yourself, into whatever environment you're in. Whatever situation you're in. And one of those tools that helps to bring you into the really sharp end of things is something that you can bring into your... You can't go running to your cushion every 5 minutes. But what you can do is that you can learn to become the master of your circumstance, learn to be the master of your life. So in other words, you decide what you're going to do and at what pace, and the things that you have the choice of taking on, things that bring activity to you, so that you don't become the victim of being pulled around by doing 3 jobs at once in total agitation or continual agitation of doing one thing and then being halfway on to the next thing and huffing and puffing and going from one thing to the other, which characterizes most people's lives. What we do is that we learn to bring some stillness and some space, because it's in that space that you get the stillness and where you get to see and get to know yourself. Because we're on an insightful journey. We want to answer the questions. We want to get to the bottom of dukkha. We want to understand what suffering is all about. And so these are features of the journey, of creating that environment so you can get to know yourself. So when you learn to bring some space and some stillness in your daily life, like I say, you can't go running to the cushion all the time, but what you can do is that you can learn to just to be still with yourself, learn to be with yourself more, learn to say hello to yourself. And how are you getting on? How's things going? And learn to be quiet, learn to create that space. And you'll find that most of the teachers, this is one thing that they do say, is it's like one of your New Year's resolutions. In fact, it's New Year in a couple of days. One of your New Year's resolutions is to find 2 hours, actually. I only ever say 1 hour, because I'm being realistic. 2 hours a day when you're not doing anything. When you're not being productive, where you're just stopping this constant flow, this constant engagement, activity stuff, and the agitation that it creates, because that agitation takes you away from who you are. Agitation takes you out there. It doesn't take. Everything becomes all jumbled and mixed, and like looking into the agitated pool. How easy is it? You know what it's like. Go up to a pool and just go like that. It doesn't take a lot, and it sends ripples out. And you're looking into the pool, and you can't see below the surface. And that's only just going like this. Never mind doing this. You've only got to do that. And you can't... You want to look. You want to look into the depths of the pool. And you just go like that. And it stops you. And that's only going like this. But you really want to look. You just dropped a 50 pence piece down then. You wonder, where did it go? You've had it. You're never going to find it. We're exactly the same as that. We're in a state of agitation. You're not going to get to know yourself. You're not going to get to the... You're not going to answer the question. You're not going to get to the basis of why you suffer, why life is unsatisfactory, why things are not as good as they could be or should be. Why do things keep slipping through my fingers and I can never seem to be satisfied? I can never just settle and say, that's it, I'm content. I want nothing for the rest of my life. Why can we never get to that place? Well, there's a reason why you can't. And you can actually get to that place. It's not impossible. It's not some pie-in-the-sky thing. You can absolutely get to that place. So it's not an impossibility, but you've got to see why you can't pull it off. There's a reason for it. It's not just the way it is. There is a reason for it. And to discover that agitation, whatever it may be, discover you're the one who's making it. Not your mother and your father and the politics and the world and the system you live in and anyone but yourself is doing that. That's the journey that we're on, and we have to learn to bring as much stillness as we can so that we can see it and know it and change it. And a part of that, learning to be still, is to bring stillness to your life. We've got it here, as I say, in bucketfuls here. But to bring it to your life, to take control of your life, and say, this is so important to me. What I'm doing, this training, is so important to me. This is not a hobby. This is not... I've got far more important things to do. Far more priority. See, this is so important to me, and I'm going to do my level best. I'm going to engineer my life, set my life up so that I can bring as much stillness as I can. And when I can bring stillness to my life, then I'm going to be able to use the tools to get to know myself. The most ideal is on here, but this is only occasional, once a day for a few minutes, these environments like this. You're in your daily life form far more than you're on the cushion. So therefore, you try to replicate this environment as much as you can in your life, and you do it by creating simplicity in your life, so you have space, and then you can create space between activities. And in that space there, then you can just learn to be with yourself and bring this thing called pondering. And pondering is a very, very valuable tool, because it's like a halfway house, I think. It's not you're not in the crudeness of, as I was describing, how the mind can be, but also you're not in the absolute stillness that you can only really realistically experience when you're on the cushion. You're in a place there, and the mind that can be very coarsely, you're very much from the neck up, as it were, when you're thinking and you're caught with your emotions, and thoughts become very solid and very real for you. You are very much from the neck up with there, driven by this engine of energy, emotion. To let that dampen down so your thoughts become more tame, more benign, with a sense of awareness that run alongside of it, so your thoughts and your awareness are, so that you're not being carried away. So you can direct your pondering rather than it gather momentum and take you off into, and you become blind and lose yourself. You can keep focused because you have awareness with you. And for awareness to be there, it means your thoughts have to be very, very gentle, very benign. And actually, when you're really pondering, when you feel as though you're in a quiet place, you need a quiet environment. You can't ponder in a busy environment. You can think, but you can't ponder. Pondering has its own quality. It needs that environment. And when you ponder, you can discover actually that pondering, actually, you feel like it's, because you're much more with yourself, that it's somehow it's here to be coming more from the body. You can go beyond the coarseness of words. Words can be pointers. They're pointing you into that direction. It's the subject that you want to engage yourself with. And then you can, those words become very soft and very gentle and very quiet, completely surrounded by awareness. So they harmonize. So it's like it's awareness that's pondering. And awareness in itself is empty and is not of thoughts. But it's like awareness is thinking. I suppose you could say it's the thoughts of awareness, I suppose. When they're really gentle and they're under control and focused. But so gentle that actually you can ponder without thinking. You can look at yourself and what you are. That you come into you're in with yourself, because you've managed to declutch from the engagement of things. You can come back into yourself and just look at yourself and be with yourself and turn things over. And you may have a subject. There may be a particular an aspect of your life that is become evident to you. Maybe it's to create more stillness. Maybe it's allowing you're tasting something there that you see the value of, that's so important. It's a link. You're linking your daily life. It's a link that's taking you from like that extreme to this extreme here. This is one extreme. We just cut everything off here. We're going from the ridiculous to the sublime. That is like a halfway house. It's linking you, because you're in the world, as it were, you're in daily life, but actually you're not engaged with it, you're not caught up by it. And the only reason you're not engaged in being caught by it is because you've withdrawn it and you've found this quiet place within yourself. And that's unusual, that pondering, that place of pondering, because it does need a particular environment. And it's rare, because you're only going to be able to pull it off when you just learn to be quiet. Withdraw, sit down, be quiet. Don't engage with anybody. Don't get distracted. And just learn to be able to reflect and to know yourself in that time, in that experience. You don't have to be literally inactive, by all means, if that's possible. But you can ponder around, do little things that require very little of you, any thought, any sort of mental activity, anything that you have to engage with, just simple things. Do the ironing, if you ever do such things. Personally, I wouldn't know, but I would assume it's a great, because it's just a replication. You're just replicating things all the time, and there's not a lot of thought involved. You can be completely spaced out and be off with the fairies, which is not pondering. Do a bit of dusting or something, or look out the window. Things like this. You don't have to be literally still, but whatever you engage with is not distracting you from staying with your awareness and staying with that theme that you happen to be engaged with, and turn that, and something that you're turning over, and And that's helping you to get to know yourself, to see your limitations. Or to, it's a very wide subject. Whatever it is that's present with you at the time, what's important, maybe something's come up in your life where you need to get to the bottom of. So where you can ponder something and bring your understanding, the Dharma that you know that you're awakening to ever more, and realizing the value and how important the Dharma is, and just being and getting to know the Dharma, that you can then bring the Dharma to that situation and ponder it through those eyes, rather than through the eyes of a worldly activity of self-interest, but actually be able to get a different perspective on a particular thing that maybe is requiring an answer from you and helping you to come to that point. But that quality of pondering, you need the environment. And in order to need the environment, it's something that you have to intentionally set up. And to be able to intentionally set that up, it means you've got to let go of things. You've got to create space. You've got to let things go. Because most of the time, our time is completely full. We don't rest from morning till night. And it means giving things up. Pulling back. Not being so engaged. Not being so caught by something. But pulling back so that you can begin to find yourself. That's all part of the path of getting to know, learning to come into yourself and learning to find that place of insight. Pondering can be a great insightful time. It's not only on the cushion where insight can rise. Certainly, it's obviously more cutting there. But golly, so much can become clear to you in your life. You can clear so much of the clutter away from you. And for all the stuff that you're caught up with, so many things going on, you don't know whether you're coming or going. Just to stop, just to retreat from that with a cup of tea and just let it go. Be still. Come into yourself. Those mad thoughts, just let them subside. Come into your awareness. Bring your attention from your head into your body with your awareness. Remain undistracted and just allow things, as I say, you know, you've probably got things to ponder, what's going on in your day, how to react, or maybe turn over something that's happened in the day and something's happened and you want to review it. Was I skillful? Did I do the right thing? Hopefully from a dharmic perspective, not from a gain point of view. And learn to refine your everything. Learn to refine your ethical involvement with things in the daily life. Just look at that. Am I doing the right thing? Am I being ethical? Am I being skillful with my speech, with my actions? You know, all these things that otherwise you don't have contact with. And so that pondering becomes the link. And I think that's how I would describe pondering. And that pondering becomes a very, very important link. And I know that teachers do actually say, you know, never mind your cushion every day and sitting for this and your ethics and what have you. One of the things you need to bring into your life is the space where you do nothing, where you're not engaged with anything. That's so important for this. It really, you can't expect to go from this environment and then just go back into the turbulence of your life. Just flip from one side to the other like that and expect things to mature. You've got to rein it in, rein that the madness out there, rein it in so that you find that still place more, because it's stillness and silence where things change. It's almost the bottom line with this silence. From there, anything's possible. And if you haven't got it, well, whatever you got, it's not insight into who you are, whatever you may have in the world. What you won't have is understanding. And if you have these questions, you'll never answer them out there. When you learn to sit still, learn to be still, learn to find that bridge that will create the environment where anything then becomes possible. So pondering, I don't think it's an option. And again, it's something that so many, it's just not one of the topics. I don't know whether it's just not sexy enough, I don't know. It's not one of the topics. Although, like I say, you do hear teachers say this, but I don't know if they ever expand on it and why you do it. There's a reason for it. And the importance of nurturing that. It's not just something whenever you feel like, but actually bring it into your daily life. You know, whether it's maybe a few minutes, it's only possible, half an hour. I know the Dalai Lama, if you take advice from people like that, I know he says 2 hours a day. As one of your new, I remember a couple of years ago, I had one of your New Year's resolutions. 2 hours a day, do nothing. Well, that might be idealistic for a lot of people. For a lot of people it wouldn't be, especially single people. You don't have a lot of commitments to others. That's a lot. But it allows you to find that space between activity and the extreme of coming off the cushion. Learn to be with yourself and learn the skills of being with yourself just while you're in an unthreatening environment experience, so you can actually be with yourself while you're doing the ironing. Learn to be with yourself, because it's something that's doable, much easier to do than more crude forms of engagement of activity. Those things like cleaning the house and stuff, which is all very mundane, doesn't require any mental stuff. You just do it, but you're training yourself and you're learning to bring awareness into your activity, so you can be active and be aware, which is ultimately where we're going. That's the samadhi of action, when you're in concentration, but actually you're living and you're interacting with life. You're not in some quiet place. But you're living life, but at the same time you're with yourself all the time. The qualities of that pondering and what you can cultivate and nurture from that experience, and not consider, as I suspect a lot consider it to be, well, it's okay, but well, it's nothing like meditation, that's what really matters. Don't consider it, I don't know if that's the right word, but it's not sexy enough, because it's not dynamic, it's not in your face. But actually it's such an important feature of what I would consider to be the insight path. The insight path is just another word for getting to know yourself. Getting to know yourself, getting to see yourself, getting to know, let the barriers, let the obstacles fall, let all these impediments melt away, so that you get to see yourself ever clearer. That's why I suffer. There's the cause of suffering. Well, I never did. Blimey. I never knew that was the cause of suffering. And when you see the cause of suffering, you will also see the way out of suffering. Because you see why you do it and how you do it. you see that and you say, well, that's how I create suffering for myself. So therefore, I won't do that anymore. And if I don't do that, if I let go of that habit that I've got, that's called attachment, actually, if you want to know what. If I don't keep grasping and grabbing things and holding on to, desperately holding on to something that's always in a state of flux, there, if I learn to let that go, I'm going to be free. That door's going to open up to who I really am, not this frightened little thing that's desperately grasping all the time at something that it can never pull off. That's why it grasps all the time. Because actually it's never going to succeed in holding on to anything, because there isn't anything to hold on to. That's why we can never be satisfied. Always doing this, just fun. It's not like you go like this and you succeed, in which case then you can be content, can't you? But the fact is that we're always doing this like we're trying to grab a cloud. We see a cloud, or we put our arms around it, we want to hold on to it. How absurd is that? But it's exactly what we do. Exactly what we do. We spend our whole life doing this. And the only way you're going to see that you're grasping at the ungraspable is to be still. And all the skills that we can muster up to take us to that place where we begin to see, and when you see, well, look, the way, that's why I'm in the state I'm in. I'm not going to do that anymore. And that's not an intellectual decision, something that you decide intellectually. You see that in the very depths of your beings, because that's where you make that discovery, in the very depth of who you are. You see it with a clarity, and that which sees is the real you, the one that then becomes liberated from this delusion that it's created for itself. It then can shed it and find its true nature, who it really is. That's freedom. That's liberation. But it's only going to be possible when you get yourself into that place, as it were, that depth of seeing, that depth of understanding. And to get to that place, we need all the tools we can muster to help us on that journey. And that pondering is a very, very, very important tool and a very important feature of the insight path. So, review your life, look at your life. Maybe you already have this in your daily routine. If you don't, see if you can find that. You can find a space for your sitting. You will sit. You will get up at 5, 6 in the morning and sit. You can manage to do that before you go off. Somehow it's something to do. It's something tangible. You get a sense of achievement with it. So, I can do that. Well, then try and do nothing and get a sense of achievement from that, a sense of satisfaction from that. That's why it's so much more difficult and so easy to compromise on it. But if you realise the importance of it, you will embrace it as much as you embrace your sitting meditation. Create a stillness in your life, a space in your life, so that you can just be with yourself and discover the qualities of what we call pondering, which is only possible in the correct environment. When you do that, that will help you so much. And then when you take yourself to the cushion, you'll be halfway, as it were. You'll be well into the environment of pondering, into the environment of stillness. You'll be able to find it so much easier because you become familiar with it in your daily life. So it's just like a little step, as opposed to a huge step you have to take from your daily turmoil. Come to your cushion and wonder why you're not still. not still. My mind's all over the place. Of course it is. Why shouldn't it be? Who do you think you are? You can't do that. And what you can do is step halfway, bring that to you, evoke those qualities, and then when you come to the cushion, you've got just another step to go so that you can find the real depth. So don't consider it to be some sideline that's not particularly important. It's very important. So that's what I'd like to say about pondering. Okay, make use of it.